Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to the show. Welcome back. It is Action Movie Anatomy. It's Wednesday and we're here with a very special guest talking about one of the coolest movies of my lifetime. It is The Italian Job. We're here to break the whole thing down for you guys. We'll see you in just one quick second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Ooh,
oh, there it is.
Yes. So we should just do Equalizer 2 again,
we
right?
We should.
Yeah, there you
did
go.
Did we do Equalizer 2?
Yeah, we did.
The third one already came out.
Yeah, seriously. They'll make a third one. They probably won't get done. It'll be Michael Jai White.
You still haven't, sir.
You still haven't. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Welcome back. It's Action Movie Anatomy. We're here. It's Wednesday. We're talking about The Italian Job. I think let's just get right to it. We got a special guest in the room, Mr. Alex Kessler.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, he's my co-host on the Masters of Modern podcast. He's a return guest on the show.
Yeah.
And the creator of a super, super sick game that we're going to be talking to you guys later today about. But he's on the show today to talk about The Italian Job. You like this movie, right? You grew up watching this movie?
I grew up watching heist movies, and this was one of the... I made the point before we started recording that this is the second best heist movie of its era.
Yeah.
Mostly because there weren't many good ones. And then...
Yeah. Yeah,
the first one we'll talk about maybe later. But yeah,
that's fair. My co-creator, co-host, co-producer, Mr. Andrew Guy.
Woo! I didn't know who you were introing at first.
Yeah,
it's me.
What's Juliet, up, everybody? We've got that's my co-host, co-producer.
We got Jules in the booth. It feels good to be back, man. We took a week off last week. Anytime we take a week off, it always feels like we've taken ages away from the show.
Were we gone last week?
We were dark last week.
Yeah, we were dark last week. What happened was you were out of town, and I was supposed to be here. We were actually going to do a show together on the Meg, Alex and I.
I was so prepared.
I know, and I actually ended up getting called in to work on something else. It was a total bummer. But
fought
we
made a shark.
It work. He bought a shark. He had a megalodon.
Physical giant shark.
Yes, he has it still in his home. Jules, really quickly before I aggrandize myself with my introduction, can we just turn the levels down? I feel like I'm peaking in my ears. I just maybe it's just me and just my own, but just want to make sure that we don't have poor...
Okay,
you think it's just my ears. Got it. Okay, it's not the input. Perfect. So, yes, we're here to talk about the movie, The Italian Job. I didn't see this movie until yesterday.
Ever. You'd never seen it?
Oh, really? No.
I remember this movie coming out. I know about this movie. I remember the actors. Like, this is just one of those movies that when it came out, I didn't care very much.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the years, it gets talked about by people exactly in the way we're going to talk about it today, which was like, this movie was really sweet when we were teenagers.
Yeah.
And I just, there's movies from that time period that I have gone back to watch. Like, I recently watched another heist movie, Thomas Crown Affair, for the first time.
Movie's sweet.
Which I enjoyed.
Very gratuitous sex scenes in that movie.
Yes.
With Rene Russo and Mr. Brosnan.
We should do that movie on the show.
I would love to do that movie on the show.
That movie's good.
I love the end of that.
Yeah, so this is the first time I've ever seen this film. So we're here to talk about it. We talk about action movies on the show. Those movies adhere to four basic rules. Well, number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. Who's the hero? Is it Wahlberg?
Oh, it's Charlize Theron.
Yeah?
Like, Charlize Theron's the main character. One of my notes is that, like...
It is her movie?
Someone, I think it was Cracked, had an article this week about how, like, these are 12 movies that the female side character should have been
is
the main character.
The lead.
And, like, this one just, that was true. Like,
she's
Charlize Theron is the main
father,
character.
And
right.
She's also just the most capable, so it's like...
She has, like, a growth curve through the movie, too. Like, no other character changes. She goes from, like, I'm, like, I like, work for the cops. And now I'm, like... Now I'm willing to do stuff like my dad did, and I forgive him. And
she's like a good driver. Yeah, it's true. She is the star, 100%.
She absolutely is.
Yeah.
She also won an Oscar this year, too. Like,
same year.
Yeah, Monster came out the same year. So it's
crazy.
Like, this is like, she went from like nothing to Italian Job and Monster. And
well, this movie was, this movie, I believe, was just like a studio thank you. Like, everyone was just paying the studio back to do this movie. Like, I know Edward Norton wanted nothing to do with it, but he had to because of like a contract with the studio. I wonder if that was kind of how it was all the way across the board.
Hmm.
And they just kind of like slung this all-star crew together and made a movie.
Got the rights to Italian Job and just did the remake.
Like, each actor has like a weird, it's like a weird moment in all their careers. Because it's kind of the last watchable Seth Green movie.
Yeah.
Like after this, there's the like Up a Paddle or like Up a Creek or whatever.
Yeah,
and
then
he is not in another movie.
You know what? That's so weird. I'm hearing what you're talking about
the
as
peaking?
Well. The peaking. It's not like a volume thing. It's like an actual peaking thing in our voices.
Hello?
So I'm not sure if
well,
you
can adjust
that,
our
Jules,
input.
But,
so
yeah.
So you do what you can. Miss Wizard in the booth.
Without a paddle. So good. Okay. Rule number two.
The hero and the villain are always the smartest people, beings, things, dinosaurs, what have you, in the room. I mean, I guess, again, like,
Edward Norton just seems like a jackass.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't even seem that
smart. No, yeah, I agree. He seems like kind of a moron. He's like,
I just betrayed you in the beginning. Classic
classic betrayal.
He's a classic me.
He's an amalgamation of all the bad guys. I guess he's not maybe the smartest person in the room, but he's like a little bit of each of the good guys.
Yeah.
He's like like to the extent that everything he bought was just their ideas.
I love that. That's like one of my favorite parts of the whole movie.
When he's like, I don't know, I like what all you guys said. I'll just take each one of yours.
And he actually does it. He does it. He gets the specific story. Yeah. He also the similarities between this movie and you're forgetting the other heist movie, Gone in 60 Seconds.
I was gonna say I remember
it's
that.
It's the other best one. This movie feels like a carbon copy in a lot of ways. It's so similar.
I think I'm retracting my previous statement, and it's like I'll say it. Ocean's 11 is number one, and then Gone, and then maybe this, and maybe we'll think of another movie that's better.
Do you know what this movie doesn't have?
Hurricanes.
That
Hurricane Heist is actually my favorite heist movie. What this film doesn't have
is Fast and Furious from this era.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Oh, that's a little. It's like, wouldn't you say it's a little? Oh no. Yeah, it's right in the middle
this
of it.
This is 03. Ocean's 11, I believe, is 01. I think Gone in 60 Seconds is 2000.
Yeah.
And I think Fast and the Furious 1 is also 2001. So it's all the same.
Like right in the middle of it. Yeah.
This is worse than all
of I'll tell you what Gone in 60 Seconds has that this movie doesn't have.
Nicolas Cage?
No.
Raymond Calitri.
About the hero and the villain being the smartest people in the room, it's like Edward Norton is... It's like his disdain for making this movie is almost palpable on screen.
Yeah.
Like, you're not supposed to like him. Mm-hmm. He is a bad guy. You're not supposed to like the bad guy, but it's like you almost, I don't know. You always want to like the bad guy just a little bit.
Right.
There's got to be something you can relate to.
He's not even an anti-hero. He's just a jackass
just
with
a mustache.
Jackass with a really dirty mustache.
He's like, I changed my name and I'm in Hit on the Cable Girl. I'm really sweet. He's like, yeah, I don't know. He sucks.
Becky.
But yeah, Becky. Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, political, or mercenary figure. She's freelancer.
She works for the cops.
They're not mercenaries. They're just
she works for the cops.
Heists are I think that's a mercenary group kind of.
Yeah, you get contracted for
the pay. They're getting paid by the heist itself, but they're like a group of people that work together to do action packed things for money. Like
should have just done the score.
Yeah. That's another film I like.
I love Edward Norton in that movie.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah,
he's great. You want to do an impression or? Rule number four, the movie contains an inevitable explosion.
Real close.
There's definitely explosions in this film. Yeah. And the explosions in this film are sweet. I really like
they might be the best part of this movie.
Yeah, that they reuse the Italian Job floor safe thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was like one. It was like almost a fist pump for me because like that's just cool that it works.
Yeah. Like then painting it, I was already like, this is special paint.
And then the thing, and then just like the thing falls over and the cover's like, where's my car? Where's my car?
Yeah.
You're like, ha ha!
There's like enough good about this movie that you want to like there's things you really like about it, and then there's things that are just like very generic or dated, and it's fascinating kind of getting through it because that like there's like great moments like all of the heist
stuff,
like everyone's kind of just like in their B game.
Yeah, it's there's a lot to talk about here and a lot to unpack. So guys, that is the Rules of Action Movie Anatomy. You're coming to us live on the Popcorn Talk Network, which is the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies, all things movie related and pop culture by the bucketful. Today, quick Patreon shout out to brand new members of the Action Army. We've got Jan R. Melgard and Elvin Rivera. You like to pull those names, don't you?
I like to get you the good ones. Jan R. Melgard and Elvin Rivera, we salute you.
As always.
Welcome
to the Army. So, we have a lot coming up on the show today. We are going to be talking about our top three remakes, Overly Sieged, Underly Sieged, Properly Sieged, on Jason Statham. And, we're going to be talking about the rest of the show. So we're going to get to Thesis Statement here in just a quick second. But before we do, let's queue up a 2003 vintage trailer. This probably
should be a good one.
Yeah, should be a good...
As a slave.
Wanting to be richer.
I'm in Venice. Learn the language of poetry, art.
Nope, never
sex.
Open with Mos Def.
Yeah.
Like you, my friend, I don't need a guidebook.
The plan was flawless.
That's such a weird one. 45
minutes. We own this place, gentlemen.
Really strange.
It's right above you. It's just because it's like the only scene Mos Def and Statham are in together?
Maybe. The escape was it makes no sense to open on them.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with your share?
I'm going to get a Nancy. They're like third and fourth build.
There's also this one, like... I'll save it. Maybe I'll use this.
The only threat was the one they never saw coming.
What the hell are you doing?
This is the most 90s trailer you've ever watched. It's got the voice. Right, John.
Oh, there's much more 90s trailers
than
this.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fair.
I can start just rifling through them.
It's not about the gold. John was like a father to me, too.
Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, not good, right?
Huh?
You're not a good actor in this movie? Is that what you're
saying? No, he's not.
But, like, I love...
Steve, gang's all here.
He does the... What the hell are you doing, Todd?
Yeah.
He does it in this movie, too.
Yeah. The thing about Wahlberg that I like so much about this movie is it made me realize how, like... Wahlberg's like a super capable, entertaining actor now. He's a much better actor than he used to be.
Right.
But in the early days, it's just like a lot of Dirk Diggler. Yeah, and he is just Dirk Diggler in all the movies he was in early on.
Even the way that he talks,
it's like kind of soft spoken. I was like watching this movie, like dying laughing.
What the hell are you talking about, Mos Def?
He took my father from me. I'm taking this. You just blew the best thing you had going for you. You just blew the element of surprise.
Yes.
Why do you get to punch him and I don't?
Paramount Pictures presents.
The gold is coming to us. Gridlock every route except for the one.
Swordfish. There's another good heist movie from this time. Yep. Mm-hmm.
That was, yeah. I mean, that's
a great thesis. The mistake of this movie is just focusing on Wahlberg and not making it a story about Charlize.
Right.
So clearly the most talented actress in this film.
Like, oh, absolutely. Was famous walking into this, and Charlize Theron got famous this year.
Yeah. Wahlberg was coming off the smash success of Rockstar. I have to tell you that that's probably on my short list of guilty pleasure movies I would like to cover on this show that we'll never be able to. Rockstar. Have you seen Rockstar?
No.
It's good.
Like, I don't think Charlize Theron was shouted out just there during the credits.
They didn't even say her name.
They didn't even say her name.
Yeah, she kind of came out of nowhere. She was 30 when they made this. Definitely.
But she worked. Like, it's not like she hadn't had credits before this. It's just this is the first movie where she's like kind of a main character, and then it happened the same year she won an Oscar.
Holy Spirit.
The Italian Job.
You know, this is never about the gold.
Whatever helps you sleep at night, sweetheart.
Like, Seth Green
is
coming off probably the highest peak of his career in this movie.
He's built ahead of. Oh no, he's not built ahead. I think we're gonna get into thesis statement here, and I have a good thesis statement.
Okay,
and this one might be a little controversial, but I've been thinking about this a lot. It was based on something that I read about Ving Rhames in Mission Impossible 1. Late 90s, early 2000s is the most racist treatment of black characters doing tech things in history. It's like such a consistent trend. It starts literally with that film, and I think it's Tom Cruise or somebody production in Mission Impossible being like, we wanted to cast somebody who really didn't seem like they'd be a hacker. And it's like, do you mean that they're
you
just
mean
not
Ving
a
Rhames?
White guy with glasses? Is that what you mean by casting Ving Rhames? And then I think about all the characters that are thrown in to like the tech and explosives roles.
Oh, it happens a lot.
Basher in Ocean's 11 is like kind of the same thing. It's these like spunky black dudes who are like, they're either the tech guy or the explosives guy. But it's never they're like the smart guy running the operation.
Even in good movies like The Matrix.
Yeah.
It's still Tank and Dozer.
It's like the early 2000s, late 90s is like such a... When you talk about those like token roles, it's such a bad trait. And watching this movie, I was like, why is Mos Def this character? Why is it Mos Def? Why is this the character who's got like the quirky love of shoes and is like good with explosives and he's like, I don't know.
I watched Deep Blue Sea yesterday again just because I love that movie. And at the very end of it, LL Cool J survives, which is shocking. You think he dies. But then he's like, send me back to the ghetto. At the end, you're just like,
yeah, right.
It's you're like a scientist on a special marine research facility that is working on genetically engineered sharks, but all you can think about is the ghetto because you're black.
Yeah, because that's what the treatment of these scripts was back then. And it's like, we've come so far, but we also have not come so far because you still see bad treatment in like major commercial films. But time period, because it's all so like punchline, jokey, like all of it.
Well, it's also like it's the beginning of, because before this era, they just didn't have people of any race other than white people in movies unless it was in heavily stereotypical racist roles. So this is them like trying to come up with cliches to make it and then it just ended up the same cliche.
Isn't the zany tech guy with the glasses from Gone in 60 Seconds also a black guy?
I don't know.
It is. It totally is.
I can't remember.
He absolutely is. He's part of Giovanni Ribisi's team. 100%. I wish I had a picture of him on the screen because it's like almost shameful. But like a whole
I mean, it fits with Transformers. I know that's true. Like, it goes all the way into, the late 2000s, early 2010s.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's my thesis statement about this film. Something I've just been realizing as I've been watching it.
That happens. It happens just way too often.
Is the chat being like, this is absurd. You're wrong.
You know? Someone just goes, I was more offended Emilio Estevez was the tech guy in Mission Impossible 1. I don't know. I mean, I think they're kind of giving you crap, but they also are empathizing. Like, they understand what your point is.
I think your point is kind of it. You know, there are cliches. There's like the debt, like lesbian women are killed in movies. Like,
yeah, sure.
The lesbian girlfriend is murdered regularly in movies or TV shows. This is another cliche where they just like, the reasoning behind it is problematic. And so like, they're just like, every movie has a African-American gentleman as a tech guy in the background.
Yeah, tech or explosives and like always the quirky, like joke cracking guy.
Yeah, exactly. And most stuff. Yeah, I mean, he's deaf in one ear and he's, you know, he's got all the jokes and he's, you know, they open with him reading about sex and love. It's just, yeah, I get you.
Right. It's like, couldn't he just have been Jason Statham's character? Why wasn't that his character? Couldn't he have just been the driver who was like
I think that's
super cool in a suit?
Also problematic issues.
Or okay, but any of like the characters couldn't even Mark Wahlberg's character. Or,
we all would have hoped he was Mark Wahlberg's character.
Yeah, right. All right. Anyway, that's my thesis statement. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's also problematic. It's directed by a black director.
I was going to say it's by F. Gary Gray, which is interesting. Who did Straight Outta Compton? We're obviously going to get into that.
Yeah,
but I'm going to hop in with my thesis statement, and what I'm going to say is that Jason Statham should have never become anything more than a heavily featured player in an ensemble cast or a supporting role. Like all of his best movies, all of his best roles. Are when he is either Handsome Rob or Turkish or in Spy or even in The Expendables or in Fast and Furious as the villain. Like all the movies with him is like the leading guy, like Bank Job, Transporter, Crank, The Meg, any movie that he's the leading guy and it's just him. He's just not that good. He just doesn't have the movie star charisma as the main character. Whereas if he's like Handsome Rob, or even if he's Turkish and he's like the main character, but like Brad Pitt's also there and there's all these interesting characters around him, there's an ensemble. It's like, that's when he really shines.
Well, it's kind of like Brad Pitt even, because I think Brad Pitt is bad when he is a main character. And I think he is wonderful when he's a secondary character. My favorite Brad Pitt roles are not like Fight Club, best character in the movie, not the main character. Ed Norton's the main character.
Well, it's debatable because
Snatch, he's the best character of the movie, not the main character. Right, but after reading, he's the best character of the movie, not the main character. Like you, even Ocean's 11, main best, possibly coolest character of the movie, not the best, not the main character.
Yeah, interesting. It is interesting with some of those guys. Like they just, it's like they have movie star charisma, but you have to use the movie star charisma properly. And with Statham, it's like all his most satisfying. The most satisfying thing I can think of Statham being in recently is definitely Spy, and he's just like he's so incredible in it. But then it's like, you know, so we have people in here in the chat being like, well, Crank is cool, and so is Redemption and Blitz and Parker and Safe, and it's like, whoever has talked about those movies ever? Like, in the 3 years of doing the show, not one of those movies has ever been recommended for us to cover, ever. Not even Crank has been recommended to cover, or The Transporter, because they're dog shit movies.
I think there may have been some comments early on of people recommending those movies that we just, like, ignored, so we just never covered them. But hey, if you keep recommending
things... Someone finds them, and they just have been recommending it this whole time, and you guys, like, you guys hate it so much that you're just, like, blanking it
out. There's, like, seven movies that, for, like, a solid year and a half, were recommended to us on a week-to-week basis in some form or another.
Right.
A couple of them we did.
We've covered a couple of them.
We did The Crow, because The Crow was recommended by a general in the Action Army, Paul DeNuzzo. It's a big salute. I think that's true, right?
That was Paul's movie.
But there are other ones that, like, Hard Boiled has been recommended a ton of times.
Right,
Pretty sure The Long Kiss Goodnight has been recommended a bunch of times.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing is I like Statham.
Yeah.
I don't dislike him, and I love him in Spy. I think he's amazing. I think he's the best part of it. But, yeah, so that's my thing.
I mean, I think he carried Meg. I don't think that movie is problematic in ways, but, like...
It's not his fault.
It's not his fault. I think he's the most likable person going through that movie, like, other than the little girl. She's actually one of the better kid actors I've seen in a while.
She's
really good.
I've never seen The Transporter. Have you guys seen The Transporter films?
I have seen the first one, but it was, like, when it came out on DVD.
Is it good?
It's all right.
It was fine.
Is it, like, like this level, like, same kind of time period, trying to be cool, or, like...
I would say that The Transporter is a better movie in its genre than this is.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. It's the Crank that really bothers me.
Right. Wasn't there another one?
Crank High Voltage is the other one.
Crank is like borderline like Piranha 3D, like exactly. Which is fine. If you want that type of movie, Crank is great version of that movie, but it's not a good movie.
Wasn't he in one other one that was like a single word name like Crank that was like a piece of crap?
Redemption?
Maybe. I don't know.
People like that, but I don't even know.
Yeah. And The Mechanic. We did that film on this show.
Yeah. Not a good one. What do you got, Alex?
So my thesis is that Ed Norton is the most punchable actor in Hollywood.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it until watching this movie, but it, like, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, is like he's kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
And like in the movies, even when he's the main character, he's an asshole. Like in Fight Club, oh man, my life, I like have to buy furniture for IKEA and I have this really nice apartment. And like the entire movie is kicking the shit out of Ed
American
Norton.
History, yeah, right.
Starts off with him being this neo-Nazi white supremacist.
Right. So like, and in this movie, he's like this swarmy asshole. And every time, every fist pump moment I think I have for this movie is when someone else punches him.
So quick point on American History X. I watched American History X once in high school. I remember really liking that movie. I know you love this movie.
Yeah.
Am I just misremembering that movie? Because I remember it as feeling that it was like pretty good. But people talk about that movie like it's one of the great movies. Is that true? Is it one of the great movies?
I truly believe it is. I think it's phenomenal. I still to this day, I love it. I understand some of the complaints with it, but I really think it breaks down what
the racial issues then, I think it does, it's translated well. It's aged well.
Interesting.
Like, there's definitely things that are hard to watch, but it's still very relevant, and it's just really well done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, you think it's, like, relevant to today as well?
Especially because the white supremacy thing is coming back around. Yeah. Yeah, it's a trip, man. I would really highly recommend watching that.
If you haven't
seen it in a while. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'd have to go back and watch it. All right, so that is going to be thesis statement. Any of your thesis statements you'd like to share in the chat, guys, feel free. Let's move on to the next bit in the show, and this is going to be fist pump moment. It's that moment something happens in the film, you look around, you're like, are you seeing this right now? This is so awesome. I get to watch the rest of this movie. This is so good. Or it just makes you feel something special. It could be anything.
Cool. You feel super cool when you're watching it.
Exactly. There's a good one.
So I love Ed Norton, and it's so true. It just sucks that he sucks. Yeah. It's just like everyone, they just think he sucks. So
you need a really good actor that's punchable. I think that's a niche that's great to be fit by.
But Guy Pearce, I've never heard bad things about him.
You hear great things.
Things about the guy, and I always want to hit him in the face.
Always. Do you think that if you work with Guy Pearce in a film someday, you'll punch him in the face?
I hope that I get to in the movie.
Punch him in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
because I just feel like he would, unless I'm the bad guy, then I'd be his accomplice, which would be super sweet.
I've been hearing some really tough stories before we get just into fist bump moment.
About Wahlberg?
No, about actors who we grew up loving who are now in the I'm going to take a cash grab phase in their career. Mm. So like the Cages and the Willises and these guys who, the stories I'm hearing from people that have worked with them are that they come on set and they shoot a day. They shoot the entire movie that they're on the cover for in a single day. Huh. They only shoot their coverage and then they leave. And all the other actors' coverage is done with their rebel.
Wow.
They just literally come in for a day of shooting for like several $1 million, mm-hmm. and everything else is a stand-in.
Well, so I mean, like, the reasoning behind that maybe for the studio is it's a lot cheaper to do that too.
No, they get millions of dollars on these on these like low budge DVR movies to come in for like a day. Mm-hmm. That is so crazy to me.
They just don't care anymore
at all.
Yeah,
so sad.
Yeah, that is so sad. Fist pumps.
Fist pump moment.
Alex, what do you got?
I think my fist pump moment is the, like, when they're doing the final heist and the armored car is being driven through the streets of L.A. and then just, like, the floor gets exploded out from under it and they cover it. Like, that's one of the cooler...
Where's my truck?
Right. That is, like, the unique heist part of this movie is, like, the different heist parts, and then that piece was the kind of the feature of it.
Yeah. I know mine kind of correlates to yours. Mine is actually when Charlize is like, no, I think I know how we can make this work. And then she busts out the Mini Cooper on the course in their like training facility. Because you see her driving it early on.
Right.
And they kind of they like allude to the fact that this like, take note of how small this car is and how she drives it. And so when she goes on the course and busts it out, like for me, I'm just like, oh, there's something sweet coming with Mini Coopers.
Yeah. I like there was like a weight to the cars after the whatever his name is, the mechanic dude after he like does the tune-up on the cars, he's like, no, I can support the weight and it's got the engine, and then they start driving the cars and you're like, oh, these things really haul. You're like, this is great. Like they probably are exactly the same. Like I'm sure they don't
because they don't have like 30 pounds of gold in each trunk sitting there, so like they like made it look like it's lighter and heavier at the same time.
I also like that like in movies you can do shit like that. You can be like, so we're gonna take this small car and we're gonna like have this mechanic
work on it
and make it into like a super machine because he's able to do that because he can do that.
Drive opens with him driving this badass Chevy Impala totally standard but it hauls ass. I love that. Let's see, so fist pump when Norton realizes who the Ukrainian is at the end. I do love that.
That was good.
You killed my cousin. When Norton shoots Sutherland for the first time and watches.
Yeah,
it's a little intense there.
A little intense.
Wahlberg's face when he sees Norton again for the very first time. That's great.
Mm-hmm. All of Mark Wahlberg's acting in this movie.
The entire character of Skinny Pete. All of Mark Wahlberg's acting. I do love when he hits him in the face.
Yeah, me too.
You really want him to get hit in the face.
So this will segue nicely into star profiles.
Yeah.
So all of Mark Wahlberg's acting. Like, let's talk about where he was in his career. So you got The Truth About Charlie, 2002. Rockstar, 2001. Planet of the Apes, 2001. So
some of the best films ever made.
Boogie Nights was Red Dragon right before or right after this?
Red Dragon, I think, is 2002. I think it's the same year.
Same year.
And you look at Wahlberg, and it's like he had done Boogie Nights in 97,
I think. Oh, sorry, that was Ed Norton, yeah.
He had been Boogie Nights in 97, and
but you could see Ed Norton cared during that movie.
Yeah. And he's in stuff, and like this is the period in Wahlberg's career where like the world was like, okay, we get it. You're like an actor. Like you can actually be an actor. You're not just Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. Like, you're for real.
This is where the mainstream audience is trying to decide whether or not he's
he's palatable or not.
And he's taken movies like The Truth About Charlie, like kind of an indie drama where he's going to star in it. It's like not particularly well received. Rockstar,
isn't
like
a girl from MI2. Isn't she in that?
Yeah, yeah, I think it is. Tandy Newton.
Yeah.
So Rockstar for me is one of those movies, because some of you guys know this, some of you guys probably don't, but if you dig around my Instagram, you can find some old funny pictures of this. In high school, my goal, my dream was to be Axl Rose. That was what I wanted. I wanted to be an 80s hair metal butt rocker. Like, so my hair was like down to here. I had like black leather pants I wore in high school, a white leather jacket, just like Axl from the Paradise City video. Sick. This is what I did when I was 15, 16 years old. And so the movie Rockstar is set in the 80s, and Wahlberg is the biggest fan of Steel Dragon. And it's this British, like, Judas Priest-level band. And he's the lead singer in a cover band. And he's so good that when Bobby De Beers, who's the singer, they kick him out of the band, Wahlberg gets tapped to replace him in his favorite band.
No way.
Yeah.
Dream come true.
They hired all of these 80s rockers, like Jason Bonham, John Bonham's son from Led Zeppelin, Zakk Wylde from like, Black Label Society, all these guys, to write an album's worth of 80s hair metal songs for the soundtrack.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. I've heard you've said the soundtrack's amazing.
And it's all sweet. Yeah. Like, Stand Up and Shout. And, like, they're just fantastic. And the movie's so cheesy and so bad, but, like, also such a guilty pleasure. It's one of my favorite guilty pleasure movies ever.
You love it.
It's produced by Clooney and Jennifer Aniston's his girlfriend.
You love this movie.
I love this movie. I, like, and it's, dude, it's fantastic.
Do you love the Tim Burton 2001 Planet of the Apes?
Not as much.
Not quite as much.
I would say, though, at this point, like, I was young enough when Marky Mark was, like, a rap artist that I didn't know that.
Same.
I had
same.
No idea who he was. So seeing this, he was just weird, generic, white dude, pseudo-lead character. Didn't know he was famous. Like, I would, if you had asked me 6 months ago if Mark Wahlberg was in the Italian Job, I don't know if I would actually have been able to confirm that.
Mm. Oh my God.
Like, I knew Charlize Theron was in it. I knew Seth Green is in it. I know, you know, Jason Statham is in it, but I don't know if I could confirm.
For as forgettable as he is in this movie and as, like, kind of bad as he is, it's crazy that 3 years later he got an Oscar nom for The Departed.
Right.
I couldn't believe how, like,
he still should have never got that nod.
it's just like, such a ridiculous nomination.
I mean, he is awesome. It's just,
he's
like,
sweet.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, you could have done that just as well as he is.
Right,
and,
right.
Like, you know.
He also, like, didn't do anything. Like, because this, he, like, does this, does, like, no movies, and then is in The Departed.
Really? Did he take a couple years off?
It's not off. Like, there's things on his credits, but none of them are recognizable. They're not a movie that, like, you would know. And then this, then The Departed comes out, and he, like, kind of comes back at The Departed.
After The Departed,
and he's been working,
his next 10 years is not
it's
even,
insane.
It's absolutely
yeah,
A-list.
Yeah,
it's absolutely insane.
He's, like, one of the biggest in the whole world. Like,
Bassist 1996 here says Rockstar is effing awesome.
It's so good.
Yeah. Richard says, this is an interesting point. He goes, I wonder if the fist pumps worked well on Ben as a first time watcher, if they would have been better in 2000. I think they would have been much
I'm sure they would
have. Better.
Yeah, yeah. Especially at the age that, you know, that I would have been when this movie came out if I had seen it in theaters. I also didn't see Fast and the Furious 1 when it came out. I didn't see a lot of those movies.
Right.
So I got in 60 seconds because Nick Cage was my favorite.
Totally understand.
I saw Fast 1 and Fast 3 in theaters, and then just like.
You skipped 2, but you watched 3.
Two.
Yeah.
I did rent 2. I remember renting Tokyo, which is not good.
Ugh.
So then you get to Charlize Theron, which is really interesting because we were talking about her right before the show. So she does The Curse of the Jade Scorpion in 2001, which is Woody Allen, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that sounds right.
I believe so, yeah. Trapped in 2002, and then Waking Up in Reno in 2002. I've heard of the following two movies, but I know nothing about them. Like, absolutely nothing about them.
I know of the film Trapped with Ryan Reynolds from last year or 2 years ago. Or Buried.
Buried. I was like, I know Buried.
I don't know what Trapped is. I've heard of it. I really don't know these movies. Charlize, I guess.
She wasn't anyone.
She wasn't anyone. This is like her. This and Monster, she went from being no one to being in the Italian Job, which was very successful.
And winning an Oscar. One of the definitive 2000s female performances ever. Like,
right.
I would argue that Charlize in Monster is probably in my top 10 all-time female performances.
It's incredible.
She's unbelievable in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's, like, very frightening, and, like, she's just that character. Like,
that would have been a fun top 3. Ellen Burstyn in Requiem.
Yeah, Requiem's a really good one.
And then Charlize in Monster. Yeah, there's a few of them out there that are just, like, I mean, even Natalie Portman in Black Swan still,
yeah,
like when
lot.
You go back and watch that, you're
that
like,
that was Goo! Teams, though, right?
That's 2010.
That was 2000, okay.
I'm just saying
our time.
Of our
our
lifetime, like our generation.
Not like the 2000.
No, I mean, there's some other, like, really, really, really good ones, but But yeah, those are some of my personal.
Oh yeah, she was in Devil's Advocate. I remember that.
Keanu and Pacino.
She came up and also looks a bit like Ashley Judd.
I used to, and Ashley Judd was like on her way out when Charlize was on her way up.
Yeah, they're kind of battling for the same corner, so to speak.
She like Katherine Heigl also is like weirdly similar looking. They're not on the same level, but like I was for some reason some. Commercial came on this morning for a Katherine Heigl donate to save puppies video or something along those lines, and I was like, at first I thought it was Charlize Theron. I was like, wait, no, that's Katherine Heigl, because then they put her name.
You
up
wonder
there.
If any
like,
of that, oh, yeah, right, I hate you. You wonder that crazy stuff with Ashley Judd, all the Harvey Weinstein stuff about him ruining her career. You wonder if this would have happened the same way, or if like sometimes there is that thing with the market correction with two people who kind of fill the same space,
right?
And one of them, it's like in the '80s, late '80s. Like Bill Simmons talks about this a lot. Michael Keaton and Tom Hanks were like on the same track. Yeah. They were like very much kind of like the same guy. And they were both kind of doing wild comedies, and they were both these sort of zany, funny white guys with a little bit of intensity. And Keaton gets Batman, you think he's going to pull away and he's going to be the guy. And Hanks does Big in '88, and you're like, oh, okay, they're still neck and neck. And then like '92 comes along, and Hanks just blows Keaton out of the water. He gets the back-to-back Oscar wins, and it's just like not even close anymore.
Well, I mean, like Hanks is now... It has to be in the top five actors of all time right?
But there was a minute after Keaton did Batman where you were like, is this guy going to be...
Right.
And now he's kind of come back around.
Which I love. I love Keaton.
Yeah, older like, Keaton, yeah. Huge fan.
So awesome.
Yeah. I still want a Batman Beyond
with him
movie
as the voice.
With him as Batman. No. So like Batman Beyond's the show about Batman in the future.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He would be old Batman.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And then you'd have like some kid play the Terry McGinnis.
I asked Kevin Conroy, you know, the voice of him in the cartoon, if they were to make a Batman Beyond movie... If he'd be interested in playing an aging Bruce Wayne. And he was like,
that'd work too.
He's like, I'm just not big enough to play that role.
But Michael Keaton is.
Sweet. Cool. So I think this is a perfect time for us to talk about our overly, underly, and properly sieged on Jason Statham. I think you guys know pretty strong where I stand in this. I think Jason Statham is incredibly overrated. I don't think that he's a bad actor, and I don't think that he shouldn't be making movies. I just don't care to see him in leading roles. I just don't.
Do you want to do your best Jason Statham impression?
I just don't care to see you in leading roles anymore.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
I'm not even going to do it. You win.
I don't know. If I'm thinking, you can just keep talking about that.
Yeah, we can just talk about that forever.
It's a megalodon. It's a megalodon.
And I do agree that he is the best part of the Meg, and I don't know if that movie would have succeeded without him.
Yeah.
But it's also, it could have just been The Rock. It would have made a lot more money.
Yeah.
It could have been someone that's just like a little bit lower build than them, but still really popular. I can't think of someone right now off the top of my head.
This is what we were talking about. This is what we were talking about with... I think this is my thesis for Cruz, right? That Cruz and Denzel are the two singular actors alive, where if you put them in a movie, it is a movie.
It's a different product with them in it than
anyone else. Whereas like Statham in The Meg could literally be one of 40 people in The Meg in his role. Mm-hmm. And it basically doesn't make a difference. It's just the varying scale of like if The Rock's in it, it'll make more money.
Right.
If you put Michael Jai White, it'll make less money. Mm-hmm.
And Chris Hemsworth could have been in that movie if he wasn't Thor.
It would have been just as enjoyable.
He would have probably had his shirt off for half the movie.
It would have had a different vibe, because Chris Hemsworth in that movie is like pretty boy oceanographer versus Jason Statham, which is the washed up grizzled ocean person.
So that is the one thing about him is he's got that tough guy thing going.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, like Frank Grillo's got that same kind of like tough guy thing going.
I'm not saying Jason Statham isn't replaceable in that movie. I just think that like that him and Chris Hemsworth are not the same.
I completely agree. I'm just saying that like it could have just been almost anyone else.
Right. Yeah,
you know.
So you think overly sieged?
I think he's a little overly sieged. I don't want him to stop making movies though. I don't want him to stop showing up in movies. I'm just saying.
I think he's perfectly rated.
Because
he was sieged. The lead of Meg, but The Meg was not supposed to be a movie. In fact, like every article running up to The Meg was like because the person who did the marketing for that movie, this is his first big marketing push. He's the new marketer for the head of marketing for that studio.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so everyone was like, oh, you put too much money into this like jokey thing. You should have taken it more seriously. And it paid off, obviously.
Well, I don't know about that. So this is funny. I had a conversation with somebody who works with Entertainment Studios, the director, 2 weeks ago about this or 3 weeks ago. And I was sitting there, it was late, we were a couple whiskeys deep, and he was like, yeah, I'm talking to Entertainment Studios about working on a project, but, you know, they're crazy with the way they spend their money. You know, they got The Meg coming out. I was like, oh, I think that movie will make money. People are excited about it. And he's like, you think so, huh? And I was like, what'd they spend on that movie? Like 45, 55? He's like, 180.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
It's 140.
Maybe after marketing with, was 180.
Yeah,
with
But like it's projected to make money for them.
Yeah.
The point of that movie wasn't to make money in the United States. It made $40 million opening weekend.
Yeah, right.
The point of that movie was to make it in China.
Yeah. That's why exactly,
like,
in China.
They made it because there's rules. They'll release a movie in China. You have to either be one of the 12 movies or whatever movies now is selected by them to be allowed to be released there. And that's like, or you have to do 70% of your crew has to be Chinese.
Right.
You have to film X amount of that movie in China. You have to have X amount of the cast be Chinese.
You cannot
exceed
these.
Yeah, yeah. You can't exceed these restrictions. Yeah. You can't have skeletons in your movie. You can't have time travel. There's like other weird rules that they have.
Awesome.
But this movie like follows every
classic
single one
Chinese
of those things to a T.
It's
because
filming in China or Chinese productions?
Both.
So this, you're working on a Chinese TV show right now.
Yeah.
And are you aware of any of this stuff with like reading the script or anything like this?
Yeah, I mean, there's like very little nudity. There's like no nudity in it. Like
it's
from
also
the leading
Chinese
people
movie versus Chinese TV have different requirements to be released there.
Right, right. And like there's a lot of swearing. You know, swearing's fine, but there are no skeletons, which is funny because we actually are out in a mine where
no
there should
time
be
travel.
There is no time travel, and this is like kind of full disclosure. Like even with our social medias and stuff, like I talked to you a little bit about mine, and I ended up just deleting my Instagram because, but they don't even have Google or Instagram over in China. So
yeah,
for the most part, the production really didn't even want a lot of their stars to have any sort of anything on Instagram that could even be remotely related or like go back to China and someone look at it and be like, I don't like this.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And so it was like they had us clean up our Twitters, our Instagrams, like everything.
They talked to you about it.
Like, oh, absolutely. Wow. I got an email about my Twitter specifically and Instagram.
Wow.
Yeah.
What like what kind of stuff did you delete off your Twitter?
Fuck.
Like cursing.
Yeah, like cursing.
Got rid
of that. I also from Clash Royale. I got a lot of flack from them about like just don't cuss on your. It's, you know, it's a kid friendly game and like things like that. So it's crazy, and especially with the Chinese production, they like hammered down hard on.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah. I didn't know anything about that, but the money they made.
Yeah, the reason they're going to make a ton of money is because it was made to just be in China, and if you can get a movie into there, there's just a whole extra secondary revenue source. And but like as regards to Jason Statham being correctly underrated, like most of the time he's not leading movies right now. Like,
yeah,
this is a weird black swan of a movie that he like, because it is a B movie. This is a Crank level movie that somehow got released in a way that was not Crank
and massively popular.
Well, here's another stat that I heard this morning in a meeting with a friend of mine. I can talk about him. He's been on the show before, John Check.
Yeah.
So we were talking about a project we want to work on together, and I was talking about sort of some of these straight to video type of movies, the DVR market with major stars. I mean, effectively what the Meg could have been,
mm-hmm.
though they spent a lot on the Ocean stuff. But what he was telling me was it costs $22 million to push movies, the P&A, to get them in theaters. $22 million is what you have to spend to jump it from a DVR movie
mm-hmm.
to a theatrical release. So if you don't have that budget or total faith that your movie's going to make money back, you don't push it into theaters mm-hmm. just to get a theatrical release, because it's so much money to get it there that if you don't hit, you just lose everything.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's kind of fascinating, because it's like if you compare the Meg to like Den of Thieves, to like Sheck's got a movie coming out at the end of the month with Grillo and Willis that he's starring in called Reprisal, I think.
Okay.
It's like an action movie, and it's going to be a DVR movie. Willis, pretty big star. Grillo's kind of surging right now.
Yeah.
I mean, Sheck is a face that is known. That movie is going to do fine. Like, I don't know if it's going to be good or not. I haven't seen it yet. But like, that's the difference, is like, do you push that movie to be in a theater or do you just DVR it? And that's the decision that a lot of these people make.
Yeah, I mean, for a movie like that, it just seems like a no brainer to DVR it.
But isn't it? Don't you think that Den of Thieves could have just been that?
Like
easily, and I would not have been surprised if Den of Thieves with Gerard Butler, Jerry B. Oh, by the way, actually, segue on the Jerry B. conversation.
What?
You texted me in theaters 2 weeks ago that you had seen the trailer for Hunter Killer.
Yes, we're doing it,
and it was going to be perfect. And I was like, oh yeah, and then I got distracted. And the other day, I saw the trailer for Hunter Killer in a theater, and my mind was blown.
Yeah, it's the perfect AMA movie.
It's got a rogue Russian general. It's got rogue submarines.
It's got Gary
Oldman and Gerard Butler.
Yeah, it's so over.
Wait, what is this movie?
It's called Hunter Killer.
You can come back on for it.
It's gonna be some like trashy action movie, but it, like, we love Jerry B on the show, and like it's gonna be good. So.
All right, over under proper Jason Statham, Ben.
I'm gonna say underrated.
Underrated?
Just all based on Spy. I'm telling you,
that's like talent wise. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, his comic timing, that is incredible.
He should be investing in his career, doing more of that stuff. As soon as The Rock
early in his career, started poking fun at himself.
Yeah, when he did the Bring It On monologue. It's one of the most famous things he's ever done in his career.
Bring It On and from Be Cool. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, The Other Guys. I'm a huge fan of The Other Guys. I think that movie is hilarious. Yeah. And he's one of my favorite parts of the whole movie. If Statham could have kind of embraced, like, poking fun at himself. Like, I've heard from people that have interviewed him that he's pretty unwilling to, like, play games or poke fun at himself. Mm-hmm. He takes himself really seriously. And that, I think, is a little bit of some of the brand problem. Is, like, I think that...
Imagine if Channing Tatum did that.
Yeah, right.
His career would just be done.
Tatum I love Tatum.
He's, like, one of my favorite people in Hollywood.
Because he's so handsome, and he's so handsome, and he's so handsome.
What are we talking about? All right, so we're going to take a quick break from our normal scheduled program here. Just to say a couple things. We have a couple fan pages out there. There's the Action Movie Anatomy fan page you can find on Facebook. It hit 1,500 members today, so join up.
Really?
Yeah, that's just now, yeah. So 1,500 members in there. There's also the Action Army fan group, which has getting close to 1,000, I believe. Those are our two respective groups. And there's our Twitter. It's the Team Action Show on Twitter. Mm. You can check that out. And the last thing I'm going to plug before we get into something else is our Patreon.
Yes, we have a Patreon. Patreon.com/Team Action. This week, we've got a few videos going up. We're going to be talking about some top five lists coming up next week after my match with Roka in the Schmodown will be this Friday, I believe, just for patrons. So if it's just for patrons, we'll probably save our reaction to that match until after the rest of the people see it.
Right.
But we'll be doing our whole entire reaction to that match. We like I said, some top five lists, another mini AMA for the Big Lebowski, which is coming out for Paul Nuzzo. Yeah, Paul. So there's some really fun stuff on there. And actually, we haven't like totally announced it yet, but we moved over the posting of those Patreon videos to a new YouTube channel. The Team Action Show YouTube.
We did start it. We're going to start uploading videos that have come out after a couple weeks. We're going to start uploading them there for everyone to see.
So the Team Action Show, we're going to start actually putting content up on there. So we actually have a place for you guys to watch some of the older videos. I think probably the first one we'll put up will be the post the killing of a sacred Merle.
The goat.
After you beat Merle, we did our entire breakdown of that match. I think maybe we'll take that interview and put that as the first video, because I think that's one of the more fun ones.
Yeah, that'd be a cool one to throw up there, and everyone can check it out.
And make it public. So yeah, check that out. And then before we get into the rest of the show, guys, I do want to remind everybody that Popcorn Talk, the Popcorn Talk Network, has a show on Fridays called Meet the Movie Press. It's hosted by industry insider Simon Thompson, Scott Menzel, and Dimitri Panos. They break the industry's biggest news stories, from box office numbers to celebrity updates. Sometimes they're serious, sometimes they're funny, but it's always a good time. It's a great podcast for movie junkies. Subscribe on iTunes, listen on demand, or tune in live at 9 a.m. every Friday, only on the Popcorn Talk Network. Check that out. We've had a lot of the people on that show. We've talked to them about some of our things on here. We've had some of the various people that have hosted that show and their guests on this show, so you'll kind of see some familiar faces there. But check that out.
And the last thing we want to talk about is Battle Bosses.
Yes. Like,
what the hell is Battle Bosses?
This is exciting, guys. Well,
wait, what's Battle Bosses?
Yeah, exactly. well, we have actually, I don't know if you guys actually know this about Alex. He's also a co-host with Battle Masters of Modern. He's a nerd, movie nerd, but he's also the CEO of a company.
Yeah.
Like, this guy is killing the game, and his company is a toy company, and I don't know why I'm talking. He should be talking. I'm just excited for him. So, Alex, tell us a little bit. Yeah, I mean, dude, you're the CEO
of the three of us selling Kesko. I'm impressed that they would be the one to do it.
Yeah. I think it's the coolest thing. Ben and Alex both work there. These guys are, like, very, very high up in a very exciting new company. And this game, Battle Bosses, tell us about it, dude. We played last week. It was awesome.
So it's a miniature figure battle arena game. So basically, if you play something like League of Legends or Dota or any of those type of games, or you play card games like Magic or something along those lines, it's kind of a marriage of both. So you get these cool, giant boss figures. They're kind of like mini action figures.
I played Greg. He's a goblin king in my mind. Drew texted me for like 2 days, like, I am the goblin king.
There's like dragon samurais, and there's like Cthulhu with zombies, and they come with these little minifigures also, so you get like 8 action figures together. And then you fight each other, and there's like these cool gameplay. We're kickstarting it now. I'm assuming there will be things shown somewhere.
Oh yeah, if we can pull up the website here, the Battle Bosses website, guys, you can check that out.
Go to battlebosses.com, and you can find the Kickstarter.
So the way
and all
I should, because I think the Kickstarter kind of confuses some people. So exactly what this means is basically when you're a mass retail company, you want to launch a game. In the gaming world, one of the big things you do is you launch a Kickstarter to show major retailers interest in the game. Mm-hmm. So you try to show them that there is momentum behind the game. It's less to actually fund the game.
It's more about building the community around it and getting pre-orders into the hands of people who want to get it early and kind of be trendsetters as far as the game goes.
So if it's not, I think some of you guys know this, you probably all know this, but I'm the vice president of sales of the company that makes this game.
And
so,
I am having a hard time paying my rent.
So this game...
We have this Goblin King position that we're hiring for.
I am the Goblin King. It's one of those signs you hold outside the street and you flip it around.
So they've got it up, you guys are already up to 14K.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
it's going well. That's awesome.
It's going really
well. It's tripled since the last time I looked at it.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, so there's a couple things going on.
One more time, thanks to you guys.
Yeah, right. So Battle Bosses is super fun. We play this around the office all the time. We've been taking it around to various shows and showing it off. There is this giant emblazoned sword that the winner of this first multiplayer video is going to get.
This is really why we brought it on the show. I mean, yeah. This is team action. We got to have a sword.
So what we're doing is and it's actually emblazoned this way, so I'm going to hand the handle to you correctly.
There you go.
That sword.
Not Jeff Goldblum. Who hands the sword in Pirates?
Jeffrey Rush?
Nope.
Jeff.
Nope, not a Jeff.
Leonardo da Vinci?
Legolas.
Yeah. Oh,
Leonardo Orlando Bloom.
Orlando Bloom. Yeah, there you go.
Why'd you say Jeff?
Well, Goldblum, Orlando Bloom. It was the Bloom that I got confused.
Goldblum. What are we talking about?
Why
are you holding
the
sword?
Next week we'll be releasing a big 3v3 video, and Team Action actually is one of the teams that are fighting against us. Ben got a ringer. It was Michael Grothy, who was the other designer of the game. So you find a guy. We gave him big sunglasses, so he's really.
And you guys will know Ashley Morgan. She's an AfterBuzz TV host. She's also in it. She's a gamer.
I grabbed her. She's on my team.
Yeah. So we've got we've got this awesome group. It'll air soon. The winner will win this giant sword.
So check in next week if you guys still have the sword. You might have won it.
But yeah, check out Battle Bosses, guys. I definitely recommend it, not just as somebody who works for the company, but as somebody who's been a Magic the Gathering gamer my whole life. I don't like a lot of games, but I like this game a lot.
I love it.
This game is also meant to be easy for people to learn. Like, you know, this isn't, if you like it's not Magic level. This is a game that you can jump into really quick. It's really fun, and definitely recommend checking it out.
Yeah, guys, check it out. I loved it. We did 3-on-3. There's also 1v1. There's other ways you can play. So there's the website. There's a Kickstarter. It's an awesome game to check out with your family and friends.
Yeah.
So we're going to hop into production development here. We're going to skip past the writers, Donna Powers and Wayne Powers, who actually produced Deep Blue Sea or wrote Deep Blue Sea, I think.
Their
actually,
names
I saw
are
them pop up.
Great.
Yeah, their names are awesome.
I'm
but there's not
their names.
There's not really a lot about them out there. If you look them up, you will see that they've worked on a handful of movies, but there's really just not a lot of information. The person that's the most interesting in this is F. Gary Gray, who we all know from
The Waterfall.
The Negotiator.
The Waterfalls video.
Yeah, The Waterfalls video by TLC. So F. Gary Gray is a film director. We all know him mainly from Straight Outta Compton. That was his big claim to fame. But he was actually making movies for a while. He did Friday, which people love. Set It Off, which I'm not familiar with. The Negotiator, which I personally love. The Italian Job. And he also recently directed the most recent installment of Fast and Furious.
That's fascinating, because this is the last movie that Charlize Theron and Jason Statham were in the same movie together. And I guess Jason Statham got on the Fast, or like was like had to be part of that experience.
Yeah,
they
it wasn't
must
even
like each other, because
wasn't even like F. Gary Gray made it happen.
He is after the release of Fast 8, the highest grossing African American filmmaker of all time.
That's incredible, and he has such an interesting take as a director, because I actually haven't seen The Fate of the Furious, which is surprising.
I just watched it.
Saw it.
I watched it also, like,
was it fun?
The Meg, and then I watched it, and then this. It's fine. It's not as good as 7 or 5, but it's better than any of the, like, 4 through 1.
I got so drunk and saw, like, an 11 p.m. screening of those theaters that, like, by the time it got to the final 20 or 30 minutes of the movie, and there was some sort of, like, cars on like ice caps with a submarine, and like
go to the North Pole.
I like started to doze in and out when I woke up. I was like, "What the hell just happened?"
This a dream?
I was like, "I probably could make up any iteration of those three elements and be correct in some way."
Right. This is the tundra. I don't know where it was.
Yeah,
but I think he excels in drama. Like, I don't think that like all these movies are fine, but Friday and Straight Outta Compton are the two best movies.
Yeah.
You know, by like a mile and mile.
Well, I wouldn't call Friday a drama.
Yeah, I know. But it's like
specifically a comedy.
it was also more to the black culture that he likes to direct.
Yeah,
I would also say that, like we said this, I said this before. This movie feels more like a Fast and the Furious movie than I would say 1 through 4 of the Fast and the Furious movie. Italian Job feels more like a Fast and the Furious movie than those movies.
Don't you love The Negotiator? You do.
I love The Negotiator. Yeah, I agree, because, well, The Italian Job doesn't have, like, it's missing the heart that you need in the movie. Like, you do love Sutherland. I think if there was more Sutherland, like, maybe they killed him off a little bit later, that would have been there, but I just think this movie is missing just a little bit of heart.
Well, it's because the problem with this movie is that if you focus on each of the major characters, you can come up with such a major flaw. Like, it's like, Sutherland should have been in the movie longer.
Right.
Wahlberg is not a fully formed actor or even really a character in this movie yet. The love story is totally unrealized. They spend, like, a couple scenes like kind of looking at each other, and then they're just together
in love at the end.
Like, Charlize is far and away the most emotional arc and best actress or actor in the movie. Norton is given almost nothing to work with. He's just a dick. Like, he could be literally Raymond Calitri in Gone in 60 Seconds.
No wonder he hated it so much.
He doesn't have like any depth. And then the side characters are total side characters.
Right. Yeah.
Handsome Rob's kind of charming, but like, I mean, caricatures.
They're all side character caricatures. Dude, yeah. You kind of establish it. I think that when you mentioned the heart, the issue with this movie is, I think, just kind of almost solely on Mark Wahlberg's shoulders. Like, if that's what's missing, Mark Wahlberg was supposed to be that character. He's the one that Donald Sutherland was trying to pass the torch to.
Yeah.
He's the Johnny Ocean of this movie. And
Johnny Ocean.
He's the Danny Ocean of this movie, and he's not Danny. Doesn't have that ability.
Johnny Ocean is the name that I would take if I was making the porn version of Ocean's 11.
Sweet movie.
Johnny Ocean. Yeah.
Johnny Ocean. All right, so critical reception here. This movie was made by Paramount. It cost $60 million to produce. It was released May 30th of 2003. It grossed $106 million domestic, an additional $69 million worldwide for a grand total of $176 million, but it was still third behind Finding Nemo at $70 million, of course, and Bruce Almighty, which I actually like Bruce Almighty.
Was it Finding Nemo at $19 million and Bruce Almighty at $70 million?
No. This opened at $19 million. And
Number three at $19 million behind Finding. Got it. Cool.
Yeah, Nemo's at $70 million, sweet. Bruce is at $37 million, and then
That's like Bruce Almighty was like one of the weirdest hits of all time, and then Finding Nemo is like arguably the best Pixar movie.
Yeah,
possibly.
The whole Bruce Almighty, Evan Almighty phenomenon that happened is like crazy.
Yeah, you look back on it, you're like, what the hell?
Was that the last successful Jim Carrey movie?
Well, this is 2003, so...
Unless The Grinch, but The Grinch is a weird mess.
Yeah. I feel like The Grinch might have been before this.
Maybe.
I don't think Jim Carrey has had another... I mean, Eternal Sunshine is not...
Is
2004.
It's a better movie.
Okay. It's next year. Right. It's a classic at this point.
Batman Forever.
No, I know.
I was like, nice earlier.
I know.
Just like talking about the movie.
I love Batman Forever. though I think it's... We've had this conversation before, right? That I think Batman Forever is the worst of the four. It's actually worse than Batman and Robin.
Oh, yeah?
I think it's worse other than the fact that the people that are being worse are known to be that way. So you're like, oh, Jim Carrey is supposed to be bad like
right.
that versus like...
It's really hard to watch Tommy Lee Jones try to compete with Jim Carrey comedically.
Yeah.
I will take Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze over every element of both movies combined.
Chill.
Can I not watch either of these movies ever again?
Isn't one of our earliest like friendship memories when I was going through a breakup like 6 years ago?
I got wasted at
and
your house
watched Batman and Robin.
And like, you played with your cats.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Those were good old days.
Those were sad days.
Yeah, we've been there. We've been through them together, man. All right, so critically, this movie's got a 7.0. It's got 73 by all critics, 77 by top, and an 80% by audience, making it actually a really high reviewed remake. So that's one of the last things we're going to cover on the show. What were you going
to
say?
iTunes lied to me. iTunes has it labeled as a 79% on Tomatoes.
They lied. but that's going to get into our next segment, which is our top three remakes. What are your guys' top three remade movies.
We've talked about my probably favorite or close to a lot today, and it's Ocean's 11. I think it's Ocean's 11 by the quality of the original might just be the greatest remake of all time. I mean, the original Ocean's 11 is kind of a trash movie, and the new one is the most classic heist movie of our era.
I don't know the original.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The original is just like the Rat Pack, right?
Yeah,
it's just like a Rat Pack random comedy heist movie from that era.
It's fine.
It's also dated in the way that like junk movies from that era are all dated.
Right.
It's not like a classic. It's not. There's nothing you like special about it.
There's like something about when you put a bunch of famous actors at a time together in a movie that's kind of fun and it's relevant enough because they're all in it that like years later it was significant because they were all in it. So like very similar, like Ocean's 11 is that way.
Right.
Whereas like you can
this
look.
This movie's that way. I think like people have a weird fond memory of this movie. Everyone in it is famous, but it's not as good as the famousness of the people
look,
in it.
The Pope of Greenwich Village with like Mickey Rourke and Eric Roberts in the 80s was like a movie that like when people grew up watching it, they were like, oh, this is great. And like now it's like, what is that movie? But there could be a remake of The Pope of Greenwich Village, and it would be great. And like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of thing that happens.
Yeah. I'm going to go all horror with mine because I love horror movies, and I'm going to hop in with Dawn of the Dead.
The Zack Snyder one?
Yeah. Was it 2004,
maybe? 2004. Because I think I think 300 is 06.
Ving Rhames is in that.
I do remember that.
Yes,
and isn't Ty Burrell the dad from Modern Family in that movie?
Yes.
Yeah. He is, right?
He's an asshole. He's the guy who gets everyone like killed, kind of like,
That movie is sweet.
Is it really good?
It's really good.
A really enjoyable zombie
movie. Yeah, I saw it in theaters.
It's probably one of the best zombie movies ever.
Yeah.
Huh. I love it.
Like, weirdly enough. Like, I love zombie movies, and just, like, it, like, everything kind of hits correctly.
Don't they show it in, they show it in 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah, yeah. They show a clip of it, yeah.
Also,
and they lock him in the room with porn, and it's the same room with Andre is watching Dawn of the Dead.
I watched that recently, and it's also fascinatingly, like, everyone's really famous, but was not famous when that movie came out.
Oh, Virgin? Yeah. It's also fantastic.
And it holds really up good. Perfectly. It holds up great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like, Seth Rogen was not famous in that movie.
No.
He's Paul like the Rudd was like the guy from Clueless.
Yeah. Jonah Hill has like an amazing cameo, and he's like a no one in it as well.
Yeah.
Oh. We are running over time, let's breeze through this here, guys.
All right, I have the Star Trek the remake, the J.J. Abrams remake, as like a
The Bruce Greenwood film.
Nobody likes Bruce Greenwood as much as you.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it just, like, hit every cylinder they needed, and it just reinvented that franchise in a way that wouldn't have happened otherwise.
One of the all-time great trailers. I'll go with The Departed. Because it is a remake of Infernal Affairs.
Yep.
Right? So.
Absolutely. I went with Texas Chainsaw Massacre with Jessica Biel. There's so many iterations of Texas Chainsaw Massacre out there. The one with Jessica Biel from the early 2000s is horrifying.
Is it really?
It is absolutely terrifying. Huh. Still to this day, it's one of my favorite horror movies. It's done so well. She's banging in it, and she does a very good job in it. Hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Love that movie.
I have Fast and Furious 1 as a remake of Point Break.
Yeah, that's fair.
It
totally fair.
Is. It basically sandwich. Is.
Yeah, it gave us Vin Diesel.
Wait, didn't Rob Cohen actually...
He just said it.
We ripped it off.
He just straight admitted to ripping it off.
That's right. He told us that when we interviewed him.
Yeah, oh, cool.
We like, literally asked him, and we were like, it was pretty close. He's like, oh, yeah, 100%.
He's like,
we ripped
it's
off.
Same movie. Yeah,
it's the same movie.
He's like, but we had these huge fans that created this. Yeah, he came on for Hurricane Heist.
Nice. One of my favorite episodes.
One of my favorite films of all time.
Let's go.
Did they steal a hurricane in that movie?
With giant fans that they spent the budget on.
They made the storms.
But they actually do steal a hurricane in the movie.
The conversation with Cohen is like one of the great things, because he's like, we got these giant fans to create this huge blizzard for the film. We spent the whole budget on the blizzards. And, like, that guy is a king. He's one of my favorite guests we've ever
had. He cannot be bothered by what anyone thinks about his movies, which
I love.
I love it. What's your number one?
Number one?
Oh, you didn't do your second one? Yeah, sorry.
Oh, no, yeah, number one. Number one was Ocean's 11.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's yours, too, isn't it?
My number two, yeah. That was my number two. My number one is Heat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that.
Because it's – then the reason Heat is because – it's a remake of his own movie.
Yeah, the
L.A. Takedown.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he made it as a TV movie with a smaller budget.
The year before.
Yeah, or like a couple of years maybe. Mm-hmm. But then he was like, yeah, I'll just get De Niro and Pacino and, you know, quadruple the budget, make it as a real movie.
One of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
My number one is Evil Dead, the one that came out in 2014,
Alvarez one?
Yeah, that movie's horrifying.
Oh, interesting.
Go watch the trailer.
Just
watch the trailer alone. Like, I've seen that movie twice, and every time I want to watch it, I watch the trailer, and I'm like, nope, not going to watch it.
Because you're one of those people that they scare the shit out of you, but you like them anyway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm one of those that we'll see it on DVD.
Yeah, I don't like to watch horror movies by myself.
Not a scary
I don't
movie
like
guy.
It.
Though I did just rewatch The Shining for the first time in a while, and I love that
so
movie.
Good.
It's not A Quiet Place. It was marketed as a much scary movie than it was. It's much more like Jaws, Jurassic Park level of scary than
really
it is. It's like, it's phenomenal. It's just, it's not like, I was expecting more horror and less like cool sci-fi monster movie.
I get that. All right, guys, so we are going to continue breezing through this. I think, unless one of you guys wants to focus on this subject, I have a pretty strong feeling we can skip Favorite Line this time.
Yeah, I think we need to. I mean, honestly, I think we actually just need to wrap up.
Yeah, because Favorite Line, you know, there's not very many good ones in this film.
There's not.
punching Edward in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mother-in-laws, Mother Nature, and Freaking Ukrainians.
That's the one.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the shout-out. So, all right, guys, that's going to wrap us up for this week. We have three action movie categories to choose from. There are totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate. I think this movie is just totally ridiculous to me. I don't think it has any legitimacy at all.
I think I can find it in the middle category.
Really?
Yeah, it doesn't turn me off by the things that they're doing. It's not too crazy to me. They go through and modify the cars. I can give it middle category.
Fair.
What are the categories?
Totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, or ridiculously legitimate.
Oh, yeah, it's fine. It's like it's this could happen. This is a movie that existed.
It's just like, for me, that it's totally ridiculous because like it never engages me. It like it does all of the silly things that heist movies do, mm-hmm. but it also like never engages me. And like all those things, all of the cliches that I find like that bother me. By the end of the movie, I'm just like, I keep waiting for that scene or that moment where I was like, where I'm like, oh yeah, like this really hit home for me.
Right.
Like,
this is the huge payoff moment.
I keep waiting for the Ed Harris in the shower room scene. Like, there's something that makes me be like, there's one just unbelievable element in this movie.
It's a someone took, it's a paint by numbers movie. Like, yeah. every single thing yeah. is, like, kind of forced into it. You're just like, okay, we got famous people. All these people are really famous right now. We got
a relationship.
Heist. We got a relationship. Yeah. The guy and the girl are going to fall over there. They're going after their, like, dead dad. It's like every single piece of this movie is a like, thing that someone else came up with.
Because it doesn't even have the, like, there are relationships that, like, in Gone in 60 Seconds, for instance, like, Duvall and Cage, like, their relationship, talking about the old days. Like, there's stuff in that movie where you're like, I'm bought into this world. Like, right. This feels cool to me.
And they're more ridiculous because it's like they're stealing so many cars in 1 hour or whatever. But this is like, oh, they're just like robbing a guy's gold. It's also like the stakes are low.
Yeah.
It's not like Ocean's 11 where they're robbing three casinos in the largest heist of all time. They're just like robbing a dude they know.
Yes, there's the 27 mil in gold left. So, all right, guys, that's going to wrap us up on that one. We've just got one last segment we're going to talk about, and that is called The Pitch. Wow. So,
you guys should like warn me on these.
No, we don't.
We always like to catch you off guard.
Okay. The salute and the pitch. So the pitch, this is an interesting one. Once again, we will both be, I think, out of town next week.
Yep,
and we will. So it's a tough season. He's filming a TV show, obviously, and I am traveling a lot for several jobs, one of which is Kesko. So we won't be here next week. What we're going to do, guys, is we're going to pre-tape a film, and it's for one of the generals of the Action Army.
Yeah. The movie is called The Searchers.
The Searchers, a
1956 classic starring John Wayne.
Yeah, it's a John Ford film. It's considered by most to be the best John Wayne movie, or in the top two or three. A lot of modern Westerns reference this film, and it's dated and incredibly racist, but we're going to talk about it because it's a classic, and we dedicate films to generals of the army.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think it'll be a really interesting conversation for us to have. There's a lot of... It's so crazy. You watch a movie that's almost, 70 years old, and, like, you look at it, and you're like, holy crap, like, the stunts, and, you know, so there's a lot of things we're going to talk about with that movie. There's obviously the racial overtones, undertones, and just hitting you in the face with it, and I think it'll be a really cool episode.
Yeah, 100%. Who is the general?
I was trying to look him up. I can't find him right now, so obviously...
Is it Andrew Hayes, maybe?
It might be Andrew Hayes.
Daniel Sala?
It's not Sala. Maybe it's Hayes. No, because we did Quigley for Hayes. I couldn't even tell you. There's so many now that we're so thankful of all
we're
of
so
you guys.
Thankful. We need to figure out who the hell it was for. So,
So we'll be doing The Searchers next week.
Yeah, 100%. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you guys same time, same place next week.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.